now. Boy, and here it is, Educated Educators Talking Education. Special guest. We're going to do a little sidetrack before we get into our special guest. You've heard him talk here before, and we're going to talk about ChatGPT and artificial intelligence. John Warner, though, how are you doing? Welcome back to Busted Pencils.
I'm good. Always very good to be with you guys.
So, John, Johnny and I were talking before the show, before we talk about artificial intelligence, though, there's so much education news going on. I'm watching social media, seeing your Twitter feed. I follow, your piece in higher ed, just visiting. And what's going on in Florida? Let's take a little bit of a diversion and just say, John, should my neighbor care what's happening in Florida?
Oh, for sure. I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, what we're seeing here is an authoritarian takeover of public institutions without the consent of the people who are being governed, and certainly without the consent or consultation of the people who work within and study within and interact with those institutions, right? This is Rufo. You know, the biggest thing he's done is to New College, where he replaced the president and the entire board and this kind of stuff. But he's coming for the other big institutions in Florida as well. So if it can happen in one of the biggest states in the country, for sure it can happen elsewhere. This is it's a trial run.
It's a trial run
in a lot of places.
Right. And so, just for, listeners, if you're just tuning in, you don't know what's happening in Florida. The governor DeSantis, has largely taken as he said, Florida is a place where woke goes to die, diversity, equity and inclusion on the chopping block. And in fact, a bill that's coming out has some serious issues about what can and cannot be taught potentially in college courses in the future. But maybe more importantly on the ground, though, as you pointed out, John, New College, a public liberal arts college, a very unique college in college, has been part of the governor's election, reappointed like a majority of the board of trustees, fired the president. One of those trustees is Christopher Rufo from the Manhattan Institute, who has declared open war on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And as we're watching it, as you say, they're not subtle, because if you follow Christopher Rufo as he is framing this, he has finally been unleashed by the will of the people to take back the public institutions of higher education in Florida. Johnny Lupinacci, you're at a public institution in the state of Washington. Are you concerned?
I mean, I always hold a general concern for this kind of, like John has said, takeover of public institutions. More so, I worry about it in terms of, we've said this time and time again, that education is the bedrock of a democracy, right? It is a matter of national security. It is how we learn to do democracy together. It is situational and contextual, but yet there are some common things about it that we know over time have been really important. And part of that is its adaptability to change. And so I'm really concerned anytime the democratic process is usurped in any way, but especially around education. So I'd like to pull it back anytime I can, pull it back from the highly politicized, fight that it's in. And it's important that it's in that fight. I understand that. I'm not saying we need to put the gloves away and, conservatives and liberals need to stop having it out. But in general, whether it's Florida, whether it's Wisconsin, whether it's Washington, whether it's, New Mexico, anywhere in this country, really anywhere in the world, but especially in this country, as you talk about democracy and public institutions, is that we really get boots on the ground around what are the things that are really important to how we want to live together and learn to be together. And this becomes schools becoming important institutions that support democracy. And we reclaim that from, the dog and pony show of having these fights, which is really all about taking over and really both sides. It's a neoliberal takeover. It's a real erosion of democracy to create a crisis and a need that can be filled with purchasing curriculums or materials or all kinds of things. So the solution is a crack rock in the crack pipe of a broken economy.
And so John Warner, hold on, wait a minute. Okay, I'm going to do a Chris Rufo on you, and John Warner is going to be like, okay, so here is an establishment liberal college professor giving you the heave-ho that he's not for any indoctrination or any agenda whatsoever. He's just protecting the democratic process and la, la, la. And in fact, Johnny Lupinacci, you are the epitome of why me, Christopher Rufo, needs to speak for the people and take you out of this equation, because that liberal nonsense crap about democracy, you're poisoning the minds of young Americans. John Warner, is that Christopher Rufo?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. We all agree, and I totally agree with Johnny. I mean, one of the things that's amazing about our public education institutions is they require us to collaborate and compromise and come together around these things, right? The problem is we have people like Christopher Rufo, who has no connection to Florida. He has no expertise in education. He has no qualifications to be the trustee of a liberal arts college or a higher education institution of any kind. It's not acting in good faith, right? And so what Johnny describes is a kind of ideal where we all realize, hey, there's some push and pull here. There's some compromises to be made. There's some area where some people are going to be made uncomfortable by what goes on, but it's the price of having an institution that's for everybody. And so we should be looking at the takeover of people like Rufo, a carpetbagger who actually is, I think he's from Washington State, if I remember correctly, it's from across the country, who comes in with an agenda to overturn and uproot the institution, as opposed to somebody, you know, if they wanted to bring in a bunch of conservative trustees who are going to come in and collaborate with the existing institution in an effort to make it stronger, I think you would hear grumbling, but ultimately that process would play itself out and you would have a stronger institution. This really is Rufo declared his intentions of making it into the Hillsdale of the South, right? Which is a extreme conservative liberal arts college in Michigan. So it really is to upend the entire existence of New College and take it over for another group. This is not public democracy in any way, but Johnny's right about how we have to think about these things.
But you think about that, it's what, now you just described it great. And Johnny, I'm always just taking shots at you because you allow that. You're an educated educator who talks education, and you are part of the give and take of this show. But John, I think of this, and what you describe though too is, and this is how I want to try maybe to get it to my neighbor. We talk a little about academic freedom, blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares, whatever that is. But pointing out, you know, the kind of hypocrisy that Chris Rufo is somehow engaged in a democratic process of restoring something being legitimized by this takeover, and that the end result, of which they don't hide at all, as you say, Hillsdale College, the end result is no freedom, is a total taking away of the curriculum, putting into it, and in fact saying, here is what you as a faculty member at this college will teach. This other stuff is off limits, outlawed, banned, whatever you want to be. I mean, how do we though explain that that's what's actually happening? I say to my neighbor to go, look, you don't want me, John Warner, Johnny Lupinacci, or Chris Rufo indoctrinating your son, daughter, aunt, and uncle. Indoctrination in the hands of a winner, particularly a minority winner, it's indoctrination. It's not freedom. And so Christopher Rufo is advocating willingly for indoctrination. He's not worried about Johnny Lupinacci being a liberal. He's more concerned about installing a fascist conservatism. I mean, is that too blunt? Is that too, does that make my neighbor go, see, Tim, you were out there in the state of Michigan enjoying the legalities there the last weekend or something. I don't know.
Well, Tim, you're gonna be careful about, because calling people liberal, them's be fighting words. You know? So, I mean, I'm not overly offended by it, but I think like it's highly categorized at this moment. Mm. Where I may have liberal supporting views, but I'm more radical, I think, than liberal. And more so, I'm an advocate of democracy. And I think that right now, so-called liberals and so-called conservatives who are absolutely not conserving democracy here, you know, they're actually quite radically dismantling it. But I think the language is really important here, that we are educated educators talking about education, but more so, we're teachers and we're members of a community in a democracy. And what does that mean when we begin to just work in the rubble, right? From the privilege of being able to have these kinds of fights that really impact the day-to-day people, the young people who are going to inherit, you know, this land, this country, right? And all of its struggles. And so when we begin to depolarize that and there's no way to make it not political, but depoliticize it from the labels and from the, you got to be on this side or that side. Well, what if I'm just situational, local, and in support of this living system in this democracy? What does that look like? Nice. And so that's when I'm like, hey, we want teachers to run for office, because I do believe that this is in the hands of legislation, and it's state by state, because education is a state right, and I don't see that changing. And so as we advocate for more families and community members, and your neighbor, Tim, and John's neighbor, and my neighbor, to have conversations about the communities we want to be in, right? And we take control of that through the democratic process. Then all this stuff kind of pushes to the side.
Well, there right? it is. But don't push me too far to the side. Although we do have John Warner. I know you're not.
I'm just teasing with
you,
man.
You're just an educated educator talking education. When we get back, though, the real reason John Warner is here, we do not need to worry about ChatGPT. John Warner. More Busted the Pencils machine. After the break. But on Busted Pencils every Tuesday night, we don't sell you anything you can't be. We are educated educators talking education about the things you can be. And our guest, he is a national voice on the teaching of writing, faculty labor, and institutional values, both as a frequent speaker and a longtime contributor to Inside Higher Education. He is also the author of Why They Can't Write, Killing the Five-Paragraph Essay and Other Necessities, The Writing Practice, Building Confidence in Your Nonfiction Writing. John Warner is back to talk to us about teaching writing in an age of artificial intelligence. Okay, John Warner, how are we going to teach during this takeover of the machines?
So we're going to ask students to do the things that only humans can do, which is think and synthesize and create and be human on the page. I mean, the really, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the show before, but the thing that ChatGPT revealed was that the stuff we ask students to do is writing like an algorithm as opposed to a person. And this is really rooted in the mistaken values that have been attached to the teaching of writing really for quite a long time now. I could trace this like 20, 25 years back where we made this wrong turn. Now that we've been shown the error of our ways, let's stop, right? Let's now reform and allow students to do the work that's meaningful, not just in order to avoid them using ChatGPT and cheating and that kind of stuff, but because it's going to make them better writers and dare I say it, like more engaged and happier people, because writing is a great way to explore your own mind. It's a great way to develop agency. It's a great way to do all those things that we think school should do. Why not use this awesome tool we have to do it?
Well, I mean, that's the question is, you know, is it an awesome tool that helps us or, you know, artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, large language databases, we said OpenAI, just a quick little refresher. If you haven't gone, check it out, ChatGPT. But, you know, you can, as Johnny said, you can give it a really generic question, you know, write five sentences, it'll do that. Or John, I've been now with some colleagues, you know, we've been throwing some other things at it, such as, you know, please create a college level syllabus for an introduction to education foundations course. And the syllabus came back with diversity statements, disability statements, how to get in touch with a professor, not the professor. And some pretty interesting suggestions for core content of what would be a relatively decent intro to Foundations of Education course. I mean, so that's, you know, the one thing that professors, we were playing around with, and it's like, holy crap, it can write our syllabi for us. You know, now I can Johnny Lupinacci, think and, about and much do, time and, you have.
And do a pretty decent job. I mean, I'm not going to say like any of us would do that, but I think what you learn when you see the technology is that it does pull some of the mechanistic pieces together. It doesn't fully do the job. And I think it, you know, there's a lot of the human thinking that's so important and that ought to be part of generating a really meaningful syllabus, right? But it gets me in groups of teachers together around the core of, okay, so if it's just nuts and bolts, this program does it for us and, you know, in a matter of seconds, but it's not just nuts and bolts. So take a look at what it generated, what we've all used, and how do we want to make something really meaningful and relevant that grows from this? But I think none of us want to be dismissive of the tool or, you know, or run for the hills and just say the generation these days isn't interested in doing the work necessary to be writers, right? That's not true either. I think a lot of young people I teach are very interested in writing as a practice, right? And so, you know, understanding that it is more than just the machine generates, but what is different about, you know, the nuts and bolts pieces versus, you know, the emotion, the, you know, the different important narratives and diverse stories that can be woven and told in unique and important ways. And so I think there is a big moment here that we can get to the core of. So what is it? What is it we want students to learn? Or what is it that we want to save time on? Mm-hmm. Right? What also is important to just take our time doing?
John Warner, comment there.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of my mantras about writing is that writing is thinking, right? And it's thinking in two ways. One is it's the expression of an idea. Like we have something in our head that we want to say and we write it down. But as we write, it's also the exploration of that idea. The idea changes form as we write because we are thinking. So Johnny's point like about the syllabus is right. Like if you just want a kind of generic syllabus, it'll go grab syntax around that prompt because that's what it's trained to do and give you something that's okay. But that is not necessarily the syllabus for your course and your students, right? Like mm-hmm. I actually, my syllabus, they're like 13, 14 pages long and they're written entirely in frequently asked questions about the course where I give students questions and then I answer them. And I used it as a device. Initially, I wasn't going to give it to students. It was just going to be me puzzling out the course. What is the purpose of this course? What do I want students to learn? What are we going to experience? And after I did that exercise, I realized that's my syllabus. I'm not going to boil this down into something boring and impersonal and that erases my thinking. I'm going to share my work with them. And so if we don't do the work of the thinking, we're leaving some important part of what we're trying to create on the table. Now, if it's just boilerplate bureaucratic BS that we need to do to please somebody, absolutely have ChatGPT crank it out and never look at it again. But then we should be questioning why we're asking people to do these things.
Well, and so maybe that's it. There's kind of like a function of, so I'm creating a syllabus. It can do the kind of rough work of putting together the corners, the, you know, a little bit of, even maybe even a little bit of structure, but the reality of making it real. John, when we get back though, we're going to talk about your course. You've got a new course that's going to help us out here. It's John Warner, ChatGPT, teaching writing in an artificial intelligence world. More with John Warner, Busted Pencils. The memo says we gotta work to make the facts, but the false charges pull the wool over the eyes of the filthy masses. Seven people in the back. Oh, it's a dancing night here, Tuesday night, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Our guest, John Warner, national voice on the teaching of writing, faculty labor, institutional values. He has now been the voice on Busted Pencils of artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, how we're going to exist in this world. In fact, John, you have a brand new course, Teaching Writing in the Age of Artificial Intelligence. Did I get the title correct?
Teaching Writing in an Artificial Intelligence World, but it's all the same.
Okay. So, okay. Simple question. Why would I take this course, John?
So this is really for anybody who asks students to write in a school context. Doesn't have to be a writing teacher per se. It's just, hey, I have writing assignments in my course. I have students do this. And particularly people who looked at ChatGPT and are looking at their assignments and thinking like, crap, ChatGPT can do my assignment. And now what am I going to have students do? It's an effort to change what we think of as writing assignments to what I call writing experiences, where students have an experience of writing inside a subject or discipline where the entire thing is an experience of learning, as opposed to, I'm going to have you do something. I don't know what you're going to do. You're going to go off and do it. And then I'm going to grade it and we're going to move on. It's much more of an embodied human process that helps students learn to think and act as writers alert, rooted in this thing that I call the writer's practice, the skills, attitudes, knowledge, and habits of mind of writers. And it's really there to help teachers, basically anybody who's working from middle school on into college could benefit from this.
So that's what I could say, the target audience is not exclusively teachers of writing.
No, it doesn't have to be. And it could be just, okay, hey, I'm interested in thinking about how writing works in a classroom context or how it can work better, right? This is a problem lots of people were talking about before ChatGPT. It's really just that ChatGPT has put a lot of pressure on a system that makes students churn these things out for the purposes of a grade. My view is, let's not fall prey to that pressure where we're going to try to police all this behavior from students in order to do these assignments that aren't really maybe all that great in terms of what students are learning. Let's shift to an orientation around experiences that help students learn. That's the goal. So it's a course, it's asynchronous, it's digital, it's always there. You can start at any time. But it's also, over time, I'm hoping to build a community. We already have 80 plus people signed up. We've got about 40 groups that have asked for licenses that are going to be coming in. So we're going to have hundreds of people in there with the same problems to solve around helping students learn to write, who are going to be sharing perspectives, sharing their assignments, sharing problems. And we already have some good chats going on in the community. So,
but this is framed,
it's a place though, for humans to be human. That's essentially my pitch.
But it is framed around though, this whole, the arts or the umbrella of artificial intelligence, ChatGPT. Somebody who's saying, well, I can take a teaching writing course anywhere. What is it about the artificial intelligence and ChatGPT that John Warner's class is going to help them get a sense of?
So part of it is, it really does go over some detailed specifics about what ChatGPT can do and can't do, how it works, how we should be thinking about it as not a kind of thinking and reasoning and emoting machine, but as a syntax assembly device, which regurgitates what it goes out and finds and puts back to us. It goes over the problems that have been associated with teaching student writing. Then I get into the writer's practice. Then I get into a model, a sort of a process for instructors themselves to reconceive their own assignments into experiences. And then the last part, which I think will be particularly helpful, is about assessment. That is, how do we look at student writing and the experience of writing in a way that's consistent with our values? That is, if we want students to learn to write, how should we be looking at and grading and giving feedback to these things students are doing? And the sort of early returns are that may be kind of the most eye-opening part of it. And it was for me, even as I made this transition in my own teaching, where I spent all my time explaining to students why they got a B minus. And that's what all my feedback was about. And instead, we want to think about assessment as a tool to help put students back in the process itself. And that's sort of the model that I use, I've been using for years in my own courses, and the model I try to share in the course that I think other people may find helpful. You know, it's a process. There's no sort of snapping our fingers and we solve these things. It's an ongoing iterative experiment. That's how teaching works. And that's why I think you guys are similar. That's why I love teaching. It's every semester. It's an experiment. It's a new group of students. It's a different world. I have a different approach in some often small way, but could be significant. And we see what happens. And often good things, sometimes difficult things, but always interesting things, right?
Johnny Lupinacci. Look.
Well, Tim, I'm excited to hear about this. And I'm always really learning all the time. I mean, as we just talked about being the kinds of educators we are, you know, learning to adjust and adapt to what technologies our students have. But at a core, what is the essence of what we're teaching? What do we want our students to learn from our practice? And so these tools, they certainly change and adapt how we do things. But I also get excited. They keep us fresh too. They keep us in these kind of conversations. They keep guys like John designing courses that guys like us, Tim, we're going to take, you know, and that our faculty are learning from, and these kinds of things that help us to stay in practice. It's exciting. Teaching is a craft. It's an art, right? And when we learn about the human element of any art, of any craft, it's that the technology is always changing together with that craft. And so we adapt to it, we adjust because we're part of it. And that's dynamic. So I get excited about it. It energizes me, whether it's been this discussion, whether it's future discussions, or whether we come back to it. And we had talked about, you know, we've been in faculty workshops where, you know, there's like two groups, the groups that's like, okay, this is a new technology. What is it getting us to think about? The other group that's like, oh no, the students are cheating. Right. And that's always been one of my favorite spaces, because those are the moments where we're like, okay, great. How do we get back to what do we want to be teaching? What do we want our students to be learning? And how are we engaging in that in really different ways? And what's that look like? So I get excited about it.
Yeah. And it's going to change, right? Like the thing that's exciting about it is, like, 6 months from now, we could have this conversation again and it might be different. Right. Like, you guys are old enough to remember when Wikipedia wasn't around. And I remember when Wikipedia came into existence and we were cautioned as writing teachers, like, don't let your students use Wikipedia. It's bad. It's got bad sources. It's terrible. Send them to the library. Over time, I totally changed my approach. And I instead said, hey, if you're doing research, you know what a great thing to do first is go to Wikipedia. Because right. You'll get a good working knowledge of a subject. Now, don't rely on Wikipedia, because it's made by random people across the internet and you never know if it's accurate. But once I realized I was using it all the time to fill in lack of knowledge and lack of information, I'm like, why would I deny my students access to this thing? So as we learn about ChatGPT as a help or aid or what it can do and can't do and where humans can fill in the gaps or use it to do something interesting, we're going to do that. Why wouldn't we do that? Why would we want to stand still? That makes teaching fundamentally, boring. I can't imagine rolling the same thing out semester after semester and continue to be interested in the job. It's just not how it works.
So, John, I'm listening out there right now, and I'm sitting there, okay, this sounds interesting. So give us the part. Where do I go? Where do I find this? How do I sign up?
Yeah,
how much is it?
So they can go to whythecan'twrite.com. Okay, URL. Yeah, a web address I bought 6 years ago and have been sitting on ever since, apparently for this moment. Whythecan'twrite.com. For a couple more weeks, it's an introductory price of $97. After that, it's going to go up some. There's a form on there if you're part of an institution and want more than one license. You want 3, 5, 10, 40, 60 licenses for your teachers. There's a form on there where you do a query. Then we got a guy who contacts you and works out an even better rate for that kind of stuff. The course exists forever. Until a EMP pulse takes the internet out of existence, the course will be there, even if I'm not or that kind of stuff. So you get a lifetime access. It's always there. The community will always be there, and we're having a lot of fun. I mean, the first thing I do when I get up in the morning now is look at the chat and see what people are saying. And the last thing I do before I go to bed at night is look at the chat and see what people are saying. It's become almost like Twitter for me at this point. It's more interesting than Twitter.
So explain. Yeah, it is, right. I mean, you're getting explain asynchronous though too, in that sense. How does that work? What does that mean?
So it's really, it's a series of videos. You know, some are 3-5 minutes, others are more like 8 or 10. A series of lessons with little mini assignments built in along the way to do or not to. I mean, it's all voluntary, right? You can skip around. You can skip to if you're like, oh, I know this stuff, but I just want to look at the assessment. So it's always there. It's on. It's like you go to Netflix and you're ready to watch the next episode of Drive to Survive, which I just started the latest season. It's there, it's waiting for you, and it knows where you've been and where you want to go next. So it's a resource and a community. And over time, I've been told I can't do this yet by the people who sort of organized the back end. But over time, I'll be adding new stuff to the course as well as events dictate. And it feels like, hey, I got to update this or there's something else I want to talk about. So it's not even the course itself is not fixed in stone.
So when I sign up, I'm taking it. So tonight after the show's over, I can go to whythecan'twrite.com.
Correct.
Whythecan'twrite.com. I can sign up. I'm on this, you know, and I can just spend an hour taking this course that John Warner put together. And at the end of the hour, I'm done. And when you talk about chat room though, or not, was it chat room or? Explain that.
Yeah, I mean it's the community room and it's got topics. You know, I start topics, other people start topics. It could be like I started a topic a while back asking people to share their institutions or classroom policies around ChatGPT. We had some good sharing around that because people really want to know how are you handling this in your classroom or how is your school reacting? Because then they can take this stuff back to their institutions and say, hey, this person thought of this. So maybe we can do that. Other people are, you know, one of the things that's sort of fun, people, when they finish the course, I give a final thought at the end of the course and then they share their final thought in a chat. I often go and grab kind of the latest article that I've seen and I post it and ask for comments on the day. I have a comment on how the screen grab of me on the introductory video makes me look like I'm with my hands in the air, like the fish that got away or something else, and how I wish that I'd gotten a haircut before I did the videos, but I was too busy pulling the course together. So it's really, you know, it's all educators. It's all people who are deeply invested in doing right by their students, sharing, experiencing the course and sharing their perspectives around this particular challenge that we have right now. And it's new, right? It really is new. ChatGPT was released last November. And so the idea that we should have figured this stuff out entirely by now, I think is a bit of wishful thinking.
Right.
I had a head start on people because I knew I was experimenting with earlier versions and because I'd written these books about how we teach writing, but I'm not coming in and saying, here's all your answers in the world. It's here's a resource that's going to help you move along on your own journey. That's where I think people can get a benefit.
So it's teaching writing in an artificial intelligence world. I'm interested. I go to whythecantwrite.com. I sign up for the course put together by John Warner, guest on Busted Pencils, fully led at Education Talk. John, thanks for busting pencils with us tonight.
Hey, anytime, guys.
Appreciate Always great it. To have you. Thanks for what you do, John.
Appreciate
and
it, John.
When we get back, Johnny and Tim chop it up. Busted Pencils back after the break. Welcome back, Busted Pencils, fully led at Education Talk, educated educators talking education, teaching writing in an artificial intelligence world. Our guest, John Warner, who is with us for the first three segments. Check out his course at whythecantwrite.com. Sign up, check it out, learn about it. You know what? And it's not just teaching writing. Johnny, you and I were talking about it. It's, you know, This is artificial intelligence. It's not a search engine, though, too, to help people understand. Like when somebody says, oh, just Google that, right? I mean, this isn't a Google that. When you go to ChatGPT and you pull up the screen, you can give it a prompt such as, you know, explain what makes the colors of the rainbow. And it will do that pretty factually. It's also sophisticated enough, as I was saying in the beginning of the show with John, you know, some colleagues and I gave it the create a 5-page syllabus for a freshman introductory education course on the foundations of American education, right? Very specific like that. And, you know, where Google might then go out and find every website that's somehow related to foundations, education, da, da, da. This thing actually created a 5-page syllabus with a description of the course, the textbooks to be used, assignments, ways to frame it. So this isn't Googling. This is now intelligence. I don't know, but it's not Googling. Johnny, you've had some time where you've been playing around with it. I mean, what are your senses? What do you think about it?
I mean, Tim, we've been talking about this since you made the provocation that this is going to be, you know, a huge deal. I think you're right. I mean, I think it's just already in the first few, you know, weeks and months of this year, it's been discussed in many educational spaces.
Right.
And I get excited. I mean, I'm an instigator in my craft. I love teaching, and I love when there's a challenge thrown at us as teachers, especially around these kinds of challenges. I'm not always as happy with like challenges like COVID and, you know, and defunding and, you know, and fascist takeovers of the curriculum. Right. Those don't get me as excited as these do. These are really like innovative challenges. Like there's a new tool and we're going to test out, is this tool reliable or not? And I'll break it down for all of our listeners too. It's like, you know, I taught math for a number of years now, and it reminds me of the fancier the calculators got or the computer software got into doing mathematical, you know, algebra problem solving, you know, graphing calculators and whatnot. This was a kind of conversation of what and how we taught mathematics. Like, were the students cheating if they were using these things? And what was sort of the whole application of math that they were learning? In a day-to-day, this is like anytime new technology comes out, like a paint sprayer, right? I painted houses for years and years, right? And I'm still a guy who's tried and true with a brush and a bucket and a roller, right? And I've worked on paint crews that do an excellent job and have mastered the craft. I never got that, but mastered the craft of the paint sprayer, right? And so a new tool is on the market and is in our classrooms, right? And we're figuring out how we work with it, against it, what it proposes, how we get better at what we're teaching and our students gain what they need to be leaders in the industry they're going into. And one of the exciting things, Tim, I was telling you about is you know, a lot of my students have talked about, they're excited about this. Some of my students have been kind of a little bit bored with the jobs and internships they've got in the tech world, you know, especially around marketing and communication. They've been like creating what they've said to be meaningless content and clickbait. Mm. And they're excited that there is technology that can do that kind of thoughtless work, and they can be more engaged in, okay, what is that content? How is it relevant? Is it meaningful? And they can be in more thinking and creative roles. So I think times are changing. The tools out there are different, and I'm excited to see what happens, right? We were chatting with John about music, mm-hmm. right? In between, for our listeners, in between the commercial breaks, we were chatting about music. And if you think about music, right, things like auto-tune or things like, you know, amplifier simulators mm-hmm. and things that have revolutionized the music we're listening to, right? Music didn't go away. Creating music didn't go away. Musicians didn't stop being musicians. Mm-hmm. But the technology in the industry changed. And so I think we're in that moment for teaching, right? What does it mean to learn to write in the era of this chat LSD?
LSD. Chat GPT. I keep telling you.
I know. Johnny, you knew I was going to work
knew,
it in.
There. I knew you were going to get that in there. Man, don't be doing any chat LSD or the brown chat LSD, as they said back in Woodstock. But, you know, it's what you said, though, too, John. There's a creative, and I think that's what John Warner's really talking about sitting here saying is, maybe this tool really, really does. And you even gave us an example, John, where you're saying some of the students that you know in marketing and communications are saying, you know, the mind-numbing clickbait, the producing types of kind of meaningless stuff. Okay, ChatGPT, do this. I'm a creative. I'm a musician. I'm a writer. I'm trying to communicate something deep within my soul. ChatGPT can't do that. It can't communicate deep within the soul. It can create, it's a tool. It can do some of those things of getting things ready to go, kind of lining it up, putting it ready, you know, in the starting gate and letting it go. But the creative spark that were there. So, you know, I think about John Warner in his class, you know, make sure you go to whythecan'twrite.com to check out this class, maybe even sign up for it. What John's really talking about, especially, and I've read a lot of his stuff and we've had him on the show, is seeing this moment of ChatGPT of going, this allows us to go back to the creative, the thinking, the writing as a communication, not just a device, but a communication. And I'm going to use this, an instrument. Writing is an instrument. You can make music by the way you write. ChatGPT can produce grammatically correct syntax. It will never create incredibly powerful, thought-provoking writing. And so when we think about Johnny or John Warner's class, Why They Can't Write, then we're talking about this is breaking through. This is something new. This is something that we should be looking forward to. It, you know, and from your reference point, Johnny, you know, whether it's a really cool graphing calculator or whether it was a, you know, calculator from the 70s that used to just be able that made us go, holy crap, I don't need to know my times tables anymore. It didn't take away the need for math teaching and learning. Math teaching and learning. Getting deep, getting into it. Busted Pencils, when we're back.
Next week, my dudes.